Welcome to Living Waters Church, a community with Jesus at the center, shaped by scripture, dependent on his spirit, following together. For more resources, information, and news, check out our website, lwchurch.ca, and get connected.
Hi, folks. Good to be with you. My name is Luke. I'm on our pastoral team, and I'll be sharing today from the scriptures. We're in a short series called Adventure, Wherever Jesus Goes. We're looking at three scenes in the life of Simon Peter. Last week, we had the scene of Simon leaving his nets and following Jesus. And from that scene, we derived a number of things, one of which was the fact that Jesus meets us in ordinary places and invites us to step into extraordinary life with him. Today, we're moving into part two, titled Deeper Trust with Jesus. And we're reading from Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 to 33. And let me read this for us before we begin. Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it is you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said. "Why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." The indigenous peoples of the Hawaiian Islands were excellent swimmers. Hunting and gathering was critical to their survival, and most of their food came from the sea. But the crews of the European ships who arrived at those islands in the 18th century generally couldn't swim because it served little to no purpose. If you fell overboard crossing the Atlantic or the Pacific, being able to swim for a while would only delay the inevitable. Better to acquire the skills to ensure that you don't end up in the water in the first place. Most people knew, as we do now, that you just don't mess with big water. And if you're going to mess with big water, you'd better be prepared and adept. And all of this was front of mind during our recent baptism Sunday, when several folks stepped into the late summer currents of the mighty Fraser River. Big water usually means big power. Ancient people knew this too. They revered big water. They often saw it as chaotic and dangerous, even beyond the material sense of those words. Big water for them represented the unknown and the uncontrollable. It was the place from which powerful things emerged and the place which could easily swallow you up. And nobody had more respect for big water than the people in the ancient world who lived on it and worked on it. People like some of Jesus' disciples, fishermen by trade. They knew better than to underestimate its depths and its dangers. The fishermen among Jesus' disciples, like Peter, for instance, were very familiar with this particular body of water. The Sea of Galilee was their home surf. 21 kilometers long, 13 kilometers wide, with a maximum depth of some 43 meters. Though actually a freshwater lake, it was no less prone to rough weather. Windstorms swept down the surrounding hillsides, whipping the water into a frenzy, and it can still be treacherous to this day. Ancient people weren't unintelligent or inept, and so we shouldn't assume that the fishermen that we meet in the Gospels were that way either. Still, on a couple of occasions, the disciples found themselves in over their heads. We can also safely assume that these fishermen disciples knew that it would be incredibly dangerous if you were to willingly put yourself outside of a boat in the middle of the Sea of Galilee. Dangerous is a generous term. They'd probably call it stupid. All this is why the story before us today probably sounded more bonkers to its first audience than it even does to us now. Peter was a fisherman who, since meeting Jesus, was commissioned a fisher of men, but Peter's new vocation didn't mean he'd forgotten everything he knew about his old job. What on earth was he thinking? Everyone knows you stay in the boat. Yet the scene that we just read has grown so famous as to become all too familiar, mapped over by all manner of metaphor, the waves too well trodden. Often, all we draw from the story of Peter walking on the water is a net full of cliches. Maybe it would help to change our space, you know, to hear the story in a small boat at night in the middle of the Georgia Strait as a storm picks up. But since we can't do that, let's at least try to imagine the blue waters of the Galilee lapping at our feet under our cozy church chairs or in our living rooms. The episode begins with Jesus wrapping up a full day of wonder-working among the crowds with the hope of finding some solitude. It's not uncommon in the Gospels for Jesus to wander off alone, especially before or after big events. And so Jesus hikes the mountain to pray, but not before sending his disciples to the western shore across the lake. We should remember the disciples were making this crossing at night, which wasn't strange to the fishermen aboard, night or early morning fishing being common to them. But just because a crossing was necessary, it didn't make it safe. In this case, the disciples were fighting some wind at minimum, so it wasn't a smooth crossing. As they often do in the Gospels, things then get strange. In the middle of the lake, just before dawn, the disciples spot something which makes them quake in their sandals. It was like something from a nightmare. If you'd had a nightmare about being in a boat in rough weather in the dark. It wasn't Jonah's fish, and it wasn't Leviathan. Whatever they saw in the distance appeared to be a figure walking on the waves. Ghost was their best guess. The nightmare didn't end very quickly, so much as take a turn. The figure began speaking to them over the wind, claiming to be their Jesus, not a ghost or a demon from the deep. The figure tells them to gather their courage because it really was him. "Don't be afraid," it says. Statistically, that's the most common message from God to people in the entire Bible. Not smarten up, not do your chores. The most frequent command in the Bible is, "Don't be afraid." "Don't be afraid," says the figure to those in the boat. The figure also claimed to be their Jesus. So maybe it wasn't a ghost, but that didn't mean everyone was breathing easy now. The disciples were still in the middle of the sea, in the dark, in rough weather, and their teacher seemed to be doing the impossible. They'd seen Jesus do the impossible before, of course, but how would you react to the guy that you just had dinner with wandering around on top of the water? Peter's reaction, I think, would not have been my reaction. He shouts back over the wind, "Lord, if it is you, tell me to come to you on the water." That's quite the science experiment, don't you think? If it really was Jesus, then Peter expected Jesus' invitation would enable him to water walk also. At least that seems to have been Peter's hypothesis. Talk about putting your money where your mouth is. "Come," Jesus replied. It bears noting that Peter didn't take to the water without an invitation, which is a crucial plot point. Faith is not some Christian version of manifestation. We don't pray, "My will be done," but "Your will be done." We only need do what Jesus directs, no matter how eager or well-intended we may be. What some have called faith in hindsight was really a kind of self-indulgent wish fulfillment. Wisely, Peter knew he had no business outside of the boat without Jesus and Jesus' direction. Based on what he'd seen already, Peter had enough confidence in Jesus to give it a go if invited. Still, that staggers me, and I think that's part of the point. For a moment there, Jesus filled up the foreground of Peter's imagination. Peter's trust in Jesus giving him the guts to risk something like that. His surroundings were pressed to the periphery as Jesus took up his focus. Bundling up his robes, he climbed over the side of the boat and eventually shifted his weight from the wooden hull over to the water underfoot. And there was Peter on the waves, doing what Jesus was doing. What did it feel like? Was it like walking on a waterbed? Was it more like skating on ice? No, these are all valid questions that I have also, but the gospel writer doesn't give us details. He adds, though, that things soon changed. When he, Peter, saw the wind, he was afraid. Suddenly, the conditions surged from Peter's peripheral vision and again took up his focus. The foreground now all wind and waves. Full of confidence a moment earlier, he then felt the intensity of the weather and he caved. What happened to Peter's faith, his trust, his willingness to go for it? Wind happened. The conditions unmistakably evidenced themselves. And who can fault Peter for that? Come to think of it, who can fault us? Peter begins sinking. He didn't know what was down there in the chaotic deep of the Galilee, but he was sure of at least one inevitability: death. Terrified and desperate, he shouted for Jesus to save him. His friends couldn't help. They were all still in the boat. It was just him and Jesus out there. Just Peter and Jesus out in the big water, the wind picking up, the waves getting rough. That's the base reality of our entire human experience, really. We've got friends and families, sure. But in the end, we are alone in the big water of unknowing. Rough weather, the worst condition being the facing of our own mortality, brings things into sharp focus. For Peter, in this instance, it brought Jesus back into focus. He shouted for Jesus in a panic, knowing only Jesus could help. And that's true for us too. Only God can save from what I am certain will swallow me up. It's important to remember, as we read this story, that we should never look down on others when they're sinking, when doubt or fear is swirling. Judgment really only makes people sink faster, including judging ourselves. And besides, people in glass boats, they shouldn't throw stones, should they? Our best bet is really just to alert others of God's presence, to remind ourselves too of God's presence. When sinking, remember God's proximity and shout for him. We might only be able to muster a whisper, and that'll do just fine. The power does not reside in the volume of our ask, but with the recipient of our request, with God himself. Peter asks for help from his only hope. And Jesus doesn't let Peter sink. Apparently very capable to deal with the whole debacle, we read, immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. What an image. There was Peter sinking in panic, right on the edge of death itself. Jesus reaches and his grip is firm. Jesus' final and greatest reach comes later when he takes on death itself. He reaches across his cross in confidence and in love. God reaches with confidence and love when we call for him. The bad conditions don't daunt him, including the forecast of death. Picture Jesus for a moment, standing sure-footed over the deep, chaotic unknown. Picture Jesus holding Peter up. And then comes a question. There on the water together, Jesus asked Peter, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" You know, we have no record of Peter's answer, maybe because we don't need one. We already know that answer. The conditions got on top of Peter. The conditions took his focus and his faith. And they can take our focus and faith too. I really do hesitate to disagree with Jesus. But for the record, I don't think that Peter had small faith. No one else opted for water walking with Jesus in the middle of a storm. And I'm not sure that I blame them. I'm in awe of Peter's faith, you know, his willingness to go where Jesus goes. With the simplicity and almost impulsivity of a child, he takes his apprenticeship to Jesus so literally. He wants to do the Jesus stuff, and as we see later in the scriptures, he does. So comparatively, I don't think Peter has small faith, but my opinion matters little, because apparently Jesus does. And that's because Jesus knows something about himself which Peter had yet to grasp. This is one of those gospel stories which reminds us that Jesus had a much clearer sense of himself than everyone else around him, even the likes of Peter. If Peter had a firmer grip on who Jesus really was, Jesus' true scale, you could say, he might have begun dancing on the waves. Peter had enough trust to risk stepping out of the boat, which may be impressive to you and I, but for Jesus, that's comparatively small potatoes. Comparative to what? Comparative to Jesus himself. Jesus knew who he was. And once Peter had a firmer grip on that reality, the sky was a limit. In a tough moment, Peter felt the rough weather and he trusted it had an upper hand, until that he learned that it didn't. I don't think that Jesus was scolding Peter for taking his eye off the ball, inferring that he should try a little harder at his faith. I think he's asking, what changed? What changed, Peter? We know that answer too. Peter's focus changed as the conditions got on top of him. But like any great teacher, Jesus wouldn't let the moment pass without a lesson for his beloved protege. Faith was just another word for trust. So long as Peter's trust remained fixed on the truest authority, even creation itself could be reordered. Water made walkable. Jesus wanted to fill up Peter's vision even further, drawing him into even deeper waters of trust. Jesus would do the heavy lifting. Peter's part was trust. Trust not dependent on the conditions, but on the constant of Jesus himself. In the other gospel stories about Jesus calming a storm from inside of the boat, we're told that the disciples react to that by becoming terrified of Jesus. They know better than to underestimate big water, but they were learning now not to underestimate Jesus. In other words, they had more reverence for the guy in the boat with them than the conditions outside of it. And the same goes for this story. What had more authority, more power? The waves, the wind, the conditions? What has more authority or power? Our problems, our mistakes, our mortality, or the God beyond them? We rarely underestimate the conditions. We often underestimate God. Just the other day, our 7-year-old tried to convince me that she was ready to jump off the high dive at the Walnut Grove Rec Center. Her confidence stems in part, I think, from when she was 2, and I would take her swimming in the deep end. She started jumping off the side and then off diving boards, always into my arms or me nearby. She jumped into Lake Okanagan this summer for the first time, even with the Ogopogo lurking. There are still moments where she's reticent to jump, especially in new places, and that's perfectly normal. But usually she's game, so long as I'm present. And that's because she's learned that as daunting as the water might be, I'm there. My whereabouts gives her the confidence to do what otherwise might deter her. She has more trust in me than fear of the deep. So she jumps in freedom, continuing to test the boundaries of her trust. Sometimes she'll say, "Dad, tell me to jump," because she knows that if I say she can jump, she'll be okay. Lord, if it's you, tell me to come. Come, said Jesus. Nothing appears bigger than the very real conditions which cause doubt and fear. The rough water surrounding Peter wasn't all in his head, and no amount of positive self-talk would have stopped him from sinking. Only one thing could help him: his trust in something bigger than big water. There in the pre-dawn darkness on the Galilee, Jesus drew back the curtain on a reality greater than the danger and fear of big water. This is why the story ends this way. And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshiped him. Jesus' nature and capacity had flooded the foreground of his disciples' vision. Whoever they thought he was more. They would think twice now about underestimating him. The swell of his power, the depth of his capacity had outmeasured anything they'd known prior. He was worthy not only of their learning, but of their awe, of their worship, of their trust. Trust not in the cuddly sense of the word, but a trust for when the going got rough. Trust in any conditions. The point of this story is not the problem with Peter's faith. The point is that Peter and the disciples eventually saw Jesus rightly. Following that, the point was for them to remember that they could expect Jesus to bring the power and the care should they bring the trust. Both of these points go for us too. See Jesus rightly. Maker of heaven and earth, come to seek and save the sinking. Let him fill up the foreground of your vision, your trust in him growing closer to his true scale. Find yourself not swallowed up, but walking in his capacity, under his care. Lord, if it is you, tell me to come. Come, said Jesus.
Thanks for joining today. If you'd like to get more connected or involved in any way, please reach out. We'd love to help. Have a great week.